Chris, I hope you're doing well. Welcome into the game here in T-Town.
Hey, Ron, how you doing?
Good, good. Welcome back to Tuscaloosa. It's always football season, right?
Oh, yeah. If it's not, then we're talking about it.
Absolutely. And that's what I love about this place because, you know, the fans are expecting me to continue to count down. It's like 2:31, I think, until West Virginia, and we play over in your home state, the state of Georgia. But, Chris, I want to get an update. Give me a little update on what Chris Moore is doing. I know you retired a few years ago from the NFL, but what are you up to these days?
Well, I got four boys, so they keep us busy. One's in college, one's about to graduate, and two are in middle school. So that keeps us on the road a little bit. But day to day, I'm selling an absorbent product called EnviroClean that absorbs any liquid on contact. It's a pretty neat little product. Not only absorbs but encapsulates it, so you can dispose of it in landfill. But it keeps me on the road and moving, so I enjoy it.
Chris, let's go back to your days, and you had a chance to play at the University of Alabama, but you were telling me earlier today as I was preparing for the interview that not only were you recruited as a punter, a special teams guy, but also as a quarterback here under Coach Ray Perkins.
Yeah, I mean, it was a strange recruiting, I guess, ordeal for me because I grew up bleeding red and black, being from Georgia and being 60 miles from Athens. I was a Bulldog all my life, and Georgia was actually recruiting me as a defensive back and had offered me a scholarship early in my senior year. And 2 days before signing day, Bill Lewis, who was the defensive coordinator at the time at Georgia, our secretary at our high school came to my class on Monday morning before signing day and said, there's a phone call for you from Coach Lewis from Georgia. So I walked up to the office and got it. And he said, Chris, I hate to tell you, but we've overcommitted on scholarships. And, you know, I hope maybe you'll walk on and stuff. And I was devastated. I didn't know what I was going to do. My high school coach was actually out of town that day. And so I didn't know, you know, I mean, I was dead set on going to Georgia. I mean, they offered me and I committed. And I didn't even answer any other questionnaires to any other schools because it was a done deal. Anyway, my high school coach, Rodney Collins, came back to town Tuesday, and he started calling around the SEC. And he actually called Auburn first, and thank God they didn't need nobody in my position. And then he called Alabama, and Rocky Felker answered the phone, and they had heard about me, and Coach Felker, he came over here to my town, Thompson, Georgia, that day to watch me punt and throw and shoot basketball and stuff. And that was on Tuesday. And on Wednesday, me and my high school coach went to Alabama to visit. And this Wednesday and Thursday and drove back home, and I signed with them on Friday.
Unique story that sort of transpired throughout your playing days. And now sort of walk us through, did you get an opportunity to participate as a quarterback? I mean, how did you sort of automatically switch and become a dedicated punter?
Well, when I first got to Alabama, I think we had like eight quarterbacks on the roster. And Coach Perkins wanted me to concentrate on my punting. And when Mike Shuler was going to graduate, he would move me back to quarterback. But Mike and Coach Perkins left the same year. And that's when Coach Curry came in. And that spring, I went out for the golf team and found out I don't have the skills I thought I had.
Hey, I think everybody finds that out on the golf course, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, it was a good experience. And I settled down as a punter, and I started punting my redshirt freshman year after Terry Sanders had graduated. And so I'd been punting 2 years, and and they had recruited Jeff Dunn, and he was playing, and Vince Sutton and David Smith. So, you know, we were, if I felt like they needed my skills as a quarterback, I'd have gone out there, but they didn't need it. So,
all right, Chris, now help us understand that there's so much that we just do not see and we don't understand with actually punting the football. I mean, you know, you see these kickers and punters over to the left of the field when you're out on practice field, and it seems like they're always grouped together, and you look at the other team and they're doing this and they're doing this, but punters have so much that they have to work on. Sort of walk us through some of those skills that it takes to be a great punter.
I mean, well, first of all, it's a God-given gift. I mean, I used to have, me and Dan Tiffin used to have a camp there at Alabama, and you know, parents would bring their kids in and said, teach my kid to punt. I was like, what? You know, I can't do that. Either they got the gift or they don't. I mean, nowadays I work with established guys that have the ability, and you know, and I can mold that, but I mean, it's hard to teach somebody that doesn't have that ability. It's just it's a God-given gift, but it's the drop is the most important thing. I can remember walking around that practice field when I was working on my technique, you know, the whole walking out the outside perimeter, working on my drop on the line for, you know, 4 or 5 times around the whole field and each day. And I mean, it's just something that is hard to teach, but it's, if you got the ability, it's easy to coach. And I mean, I've worked with some guys playing in the league and have played in the league, but as far as trying to teach somebody that doesn't have the ability, it's hard to do.
All right, Chris, so you had a chance to play here for 3 years. You went on to play for Tampa Bay, but you punted for one season. But then, you know, I don't know what exactly happened, but you ended up playing Canadian football. But then you bounced back and had a legendary career in the National Football League. Talk about what kept you motivated to go back to sort of continue your dream to make it in the National Football League.
Well, I mean, I played all 4 years at Alabama. I played from my redshirt freshman year on. And I played at Tampa and cut. And then I went to the World Football League. It was the first year that league was formed. And I was drafted by Montreal. And I was a little skeptical about going, but my agent was saying, well, it'd be a good opportunity for you. That season was from April through, the end of March through middle of May. And so I said, well, I'll go do it. So I was in Montreal, and you can imagine, you know, that French-speaking country with a guy from Georgia coming up there and trying to live. But anyway, it was a great experience. I mean, I played on 3 different continents. I played in 10 different time zones. I think that whole year after I played in that seat, I ended up leading that league and punting, and Buffalo signed me. So after Buffalo signed me, that was in June. After I finished this season with Montreal, I ended up playing 33 games in 10 different time zones on 3 different continents. And I mean, it was unbelievable, but it was a great time because I ended up in the Super Bowl. So I can't complain.
No, it's hard to. I just, my question was, is sort of what kept the drive going? I mean, you know, because I think, as you mentioned, you were cut by Tampa Bay and then you bounced back. And, you know, many guys, when they're cut, it's sort of like a message. Okay, you know, football's over for me. But then you bounced back and played, what was it, 14, 15 more years after coming back into the NFL. And I just sort of, my question was, what kept that motivation? What kept that drive to say, you know what, I'm not giving up football. I'm not going to step away from the game because I believe that I can be a successful punter.
Well, I mean, that's all I knew, you know. That's what I did. And I had to, I mean, if I got in the right situation and the right team, and actually, you know, going to Buffalo, I was like, good Lord, you know, that's the worst conditions in the whole NFL. But I was a hang time punter, and their coaches, Coach Levy and Coach DeHaven, and my special teams coach, were, that's what they wanted, was hang time punter. And so that's what my specialty was, and it was a good fit for me there, and, you know, it all worked out. I mean, you know, the Lord has a plan for all of us, and his plan for me wasn't in Tampa, where it's nice and sunny and warm, but it was up in Buffalo, where it's nice and cold and freezing. But, you know, it was a great time, and played on some great teams with some great guys, and was able to retire playing in my home state of Georgia for 4 years with Atlanta, so with another great coach, Dan Reeves. So, I mean, I couldn't ask for anything more.
No doubt. And I remember having a chance, and you, I know I don't expect you to remember this, but we had made the trip over to Athens, Georgia, and we were under Coach Mike Shula, and we had a chance to go over to Georgia and play in Athens. You were in that locker room, I believe. It was halftime or postgame that you had made the trip up from your home. And it was one of those that we brought maybe a walk-on quarterback and maybe a scholarship. It was a bad situation over in Athens. I remember that day, and I think you had made it up and had a chance to – if memory serves me well, it was there in Sanford Stadium.
I did the blackout game.
Yes,
I did radio with Eli. I did the color commentary with him. I don't know if that's the same game you're talking about.
No, but. No, I was actually talking about a game that we got defeated. We brought over. You know, we were down. You know, Brody Croyd got hurt. I think Spencer Pennington had got hurt. If memory serves me well, I think it was Brandon Avalos that was the quarterback there, and we went over and sort of got kicked in the teeth by the Bulldogs there in Athens. And this was been, I want to say it was 2001, 2002, and maybe I'm a little bit ahead. It could have been 2003, 2004, but I believe that you were playing in Atlanta, if memory serves me well.
Yeah, I remember now. Yeah, we actually went and saw Mike, because I played 3 years with Mike, and I went and saw him. Team hotel they were staying in Gwinnett, which is not far from where I live, so I went and saw them the night before, and then actually followed the buses into the game, and I actually had to be, I only could stay the halftime because I had to be, we had a game the next day, and so I had to be back in Atlanta to our team that evening, but I do remember that.
Chris, let's talk about Cody Mandel for a couple of minutes, because some believe that he has the ability to maintain that next level and to be a punter on the next level. He's not as tall as you are, but around the same size. Give us some sort of breakdown of Cody Mandel.
Well, I mean, Cody's got a good leg. I mean, he's played, I don't know, 3 or 4 years at Alabama, and I actually worked with him this freshman year, and he's got the ability, and he's going to get the opportunity. I mean, it's up to him to take advantage of that opportunity, you know. A lot of guys go into the NFL, and they think, you know, they get starstruck and whatever, but it's, you know, it's still the same game, same ball. I mean, the same measurements on the field. I can remember competing against three-time All-Americans at Buffalo, and they'd come in and they couldn't even catch a snap in the preseason because they were so nervous. But, you know, once you get out there, it's all the same. And he's going to get the opportunity, I'm sure, to go out there and show him what he can do. And hopefully he'll catch on with somebody.
Chris, is it fair to say that the most underappreciated, undervalued player on the field is your long snapper?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, most of the time you don't even know his name, right? I mean, that's the majority of the time as far as fans, and they rarely know the name, but he's so important.
The only time they know their name is when they have a bad snap, and that's, you know, I was always blessed with a good snapper, and I mean, guys that could put it right where your hand is. And in Buffalo, you had to play the curveball because of the wind, side winds and stuff. And I was, you know, I had Ethan Albright up there and Derek Rackley in Atlanta that you know, I was always blessed with a good snapper.
Absolutely. Chris, as a alumnus of this great University of Alabama, what we've been able to go through the last couple of years with the championships, what Nick Saban has been able to re-energize this program, sort of help us describe that sense of pride that you have around the Crimson Tide.
Well, it's the same pride I've had since I went there as a boy and left a man. You know, Alabama made me what I am, but what Coach Saban and his staff are doing now is, I mean, it's just unprecedented. You know, they don't go through a rebuilding period. They go through a replacing period, you know, and it's hard to even describe because I'm in Georgia, so I can't really keep up with it as much as I'd like to. But, you know, you always wonder, well, how they go replace Ingram or how they go replace Richardson, you know, and then here comes another guy, you know, and it's unbelievable. So, but right now I'm saying how they go replace AJ, you know, and so I'm sure that question will be answered next year. But he's done a great job. You know, the great Mal Moore, who, rest in peace, was a great AD, and I'm sure Bill Battle's going to do a great job replacing him. And so, I mean, I'm sure that the train to keep rolling.